I settle into my seat, the aisle seat. Generally, I prefer the window, something to lean up against and close my eyes. Not to sleep, exactly, but to drift away for a while. Micro-sleeping is what my doctor calls it. We've all seen it before, especially on airplanes. The twitching eyelids, the bobbing head. 2 to 20 seconds of unconsciousness before your neck snaps back up with astonishing force like a cocking shotgun, ready to go. I look at the seat to my right. Empty. I hope it stays open. Takeoff is in 20 minutes. The gate is about to close. And when it does, I can move over. I can close my eyes. I can try, as I've been trying for the last year, to finally get some rest. Excuse me? I jump, looking at the flight attendant before me. She's tapping the back of my seat, disapproval in her eyes. We're going to need you to make sure your seat back is in the upright and locked position. I look back down, push the little silver button on my armrest, and feel my back begin to bend forward at an acute angle, my stomach folding in on itself. The attendant begins to walk away, pushing overhead compartments closed as she goes, when I reach out my arm and stop her. Can I bother you for a soda water? We'll begin beverage service as soon as we take off. Please, I add, grabbing her arm harder as she starts to step away. If you wouldn't mind, I've been talking all day. I touch my throat for emphasis, and she looks down the aisle at the other passengers squirming uncomfortably, adjusting their seatbelts, digging through backpacks for headphones. Fine, she says, her lips pinched tight. Just a moment. I smile, nod, and ease back into my seat before looking around the plane at the other passengers I'll be sharing circulated air with for the next 4 hours as we make our way from Los Angeles to Atlanta. It's a game I play, trying to imagine what they're doing here, what life circumstances brought them to this exact moment with this exact group of strangers. I wonder what they've been doing or what they plan to do. Are they going somewhere or are they making their way home? My eyes land first on a child sitting alone, giant headphones swallowing his ears. I imagine he's a product of divorce, spending one weekend every month getting shuttled from one side of the country to the other like cargo. I feel myself starting to imagine how Mason might have looked at that age, how his green eyes could have morphed even greener, two twin emeralds twinkling like his father's, or how his baby smooth skin might have taken on the olive tone of my own. A natural tan without having to step foot in the sun. I swallow hard and force myself to turn away, twisting to the left and taking in the others. There are older men on laptops and women with books, teenagers on cell phones slouched low in their seats, gangly knees knocking into the seat backs in front of them. Some of these people are traveling to weddings or funerals. Some are embarking on business trips or clandestine getaways paid for in cash. And some of these people have secrets. All of them do, really. But some of them have the real ones, the messy ones, the deep, dark, shadowy ones that lurk just beneath the skin, traveling through their veins and spreading like a sickness, dividing, multiplying, then dividing again. I wonder which ones they are, the ones with the kinds of secrets that touch every organ and render them rotten. The kinds of secrets that will eat them alive from the inside out. Nobody in here could possibly imagine what I've just spent my day doing, recounting the most painful moment of my life for the enjoyment of strangers. I have a speech now, a speech that I recite with absolute detachment, engineered in just the right way. Sound bites that I know will read well when ripped from my mouth and printed inside newspapers, and manufactured moments of silence when I want a point to sink in. Warm memories of Mason to break up a particularly tense scene when I'm sensing the need for some comedic relief. Just as I'm going deep into his disappearance, the open window I had discovered in his bedroom letting in a warm, damp breeze, the tiny mobile situated above his bed, little stuffed dinosaurs dancing gently in the wind, I stop, swallow. Then I recite the story of how Mason had just started talking, how he pronounced T-Rex, Tyrannosaurus, and how every time he pointed at the little creatures above his bed, my husband would break out into exaggerated snores, sending him into a fit of giggles before drifting off himself. And then the audience would allow themselves to smile, maybe even laugh. There would be a visible release in their shoulders. Their bodies would settle into their chairs again, a collectively held breath released. Because that's the thing with the audience, the thing I learned long ago. They don't want to get too uncomfortable. They don't want to actually live through what I've lived through every ugly moment. They just want a taste. They want enough for their curiosity to be satiated. But if it gets too bitter or too salty or too real, they'll smack their lips and leave dissatisfied. And we don't want that. The truth is, people love violence. From a distance, that is. Anyone who disagrees is either in denial or hiding something. Your soda water. I look up at the flight attendant's outstretched arm. She's holding a small cup of clear liquid, little bubbles rising to the surface and bursting with a satisfying fizz. Thank you, I say, taking it from her and placing it in my lap. You'll need to keep your tray table stowed, she adds. We'll be in the air soon. I smile, taking a small sip to indicate that I understand. When she walks off, I lean down, digging my hand into my purse until I feel a mini bottle tucked neatly into the side pocket. I'm attempting to discreetly unscrew the cap when I feel a presence beside me, hovering close.
This is me.
My neck snaps up, and I'm half expecting to see somebody I know. There's a familiarity in the voice above me, vague like a casual acquaintance. But when I look up at the man standing in the aisle, I see a stranger with a True Crime Con tote bag slung over one arm, the other pointing to the seat beside me, the window seat. He sees the mini bottle in my hand and grins.
I won't tell.
Thanks, I say, standing up to let him pass through. I try not to glower at the prospect of being stuck next to an attendee on the flight home. It's complicated, really, the way I feel about the fans. I hate them, but I need them. They're a necessary evil. Their eyes, their ears, their undivided attention. Because when the rest of the world forgets, they remember. They still read every article, debating their theories on amateur sleuth forums as if my life is nothing more than a fun puzzle to be solved. They still curl up on their couches with a glass of Merlot in the evenings, getting lost in the comforting drone of Dateline, trying to experience it without actually experiencing it. And that's why events like True Crime Con exist. Why people spend hundreds of dollars on airfare and hotel rooms and conference tickets. For a safe space where they can bask in the bloody glow of violence for just a few days, using another person's murder as a means of entertainment. But what they don't understand, what they can't understand, is that one day they could wake up to find the violence crawling through their television screens, latching onto their houses, their lives, like a parasite sinking in its fangs, wriggling in deep, making itself comfortable. Sucking the blood from their bodies and calling them home. People never think it'll happen to them. The man glides past me and into his seat, pushing his bag beneath the chair in front of him. When I settle back in, I pick up where I left off, the gentle crack of the cap breaking, the glug of vodka as it pours into my drink. I stir it with my finger before taking a long sip.
I saw your keynote.
I can feel my seatmate looking at me. I try to ignore him, closing my eyes and leaning my head against the headrest, waiting for the vodka to make my eyelids just heavy enough to stay closed for a bit.
I'm so sorry,
he adds. Thank you, I say, eyes still shut. Even though I can't actually sleep, I can act like I'm sleeping.
You're good, though,
he continues. I can feel his breath on my cheek, smell the spearmint gum wedged between his molars.
At telling the story, I mean.
It's not a story, I say. It's my life. He's quiet for a while, and I think that did it. I usually try not to make people uncomfortable. I try to be gracious, play the role of the grieving mother, shaking hands and nodding my head, a grateful smile plastered across my face that I immediately wipe away like lipstick the second I step away. But right now, I'm not at the conference. It's over. I'm done. I'm going home. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I hear the intercom come to life above us, a scratchy echo.
Flight attendants, prepare doors for departure and cross-check. I'm Waylon,
the man says, and I can feel his arm thrust in my direction.
Waylon Spencer, I have a podcast.
I open my eyes and look in his direction. I should have known. The familiar voice, the fitted V-neck and dark wash skinny jeans. He doesn't look like the typical attendee, with his glossy hair shaved into a sloping gradient at the neck. He's not into murder for entertainment. He's in it for business. I'm not sure which is worse. Waylon, I repeat. I look down at his outstretched hand, his expectant face. Then I swivel my neck around and shut my eyes again. I don't want to come across as rude, Waylon, but I'm not interested.
It's really gaining some traction,
he says, pressing on.
Number 5 in the App Store.
Good for you.
We even solved a cold case.
I can't tell if it's the sudden movement of the plane, a gentle lurch that makes my stomach flip, my limbs pushing deep into the seat as we rattle down the runway, this giant metal box we're all locked inside, moving faster and faster, making my eardrums swell, or if it's his words that make me feel suddenly uneasy. I take a deep breath, dig my nails into the armrest.
Flying make you nervous?
Can you stop? I spit, my head snapping back in his direction. I watch as his eyebrows raise, my sudden meanness taking him by surprise.
I'm sorry,
he says, looking embarrassed.
It's just, I thought you might be interested in telling the story, your story, on the show.
Thank you, I say, trying to soften my tone. We both tilt back as the plane begins to ascend, the floor rattling violently beneath our feet. But I'll pass.
Okay,
he says, digging into his pocket and pulling out his wallet. I watch as he flips open the faded leather, pulls a business card out, and places it gently on my leg.
If you change your mind.
I close my eyes again, leaving his card untouched on my knee. We're in the air now, ripping through clouds bloated with water, a beam of sunlight occasionally finding its way through the half-drawn shade and casting a ray of bright light across my eyes.
I guess I just thought that's why you do it,
he adds softly. I try to ignore him, but curiosity gets the best of me. I can't. Do what?
You know, your talks. It can't be easy reliving it over and over again. But you have to if you want to keep the case alive, if you ever want it to be solved.
I squeeze my eyes harder, focusing on the little spider veins I can see in my eyelids, glowing red.
But with a podcast, you wouldn't have to talk to all those people. Not directly, anyway. You'd just have to talk to me.
I swallow, nod my head gently to indicate that I hear, but that the conversation is still over.
Anyway, just think it over,
he adds, reclining his chair. I can hear the rustling of his jeans as he tries to get comfortable, and I know, within minutes, he'll be able to do so easily what I haven't been able to do in a year. I peek one eye open and glance in his direction. He's pushed wireless headphones into his ears, the steady thumping of bass loud enough for me to hear. Then I watch his body transform the same way it always does, predictable yet still so foreign to me. His breath begins to get deeper, steadier. His fingers begin to twitch in his lap, his mouth hanging open like a creaky cupboard door, a single bead of drool quivering in the corner of his lip. 5 minutes later, a gentle snore erupts from his throat, and I feel a pinch in my jaw as I clench my teeth. Then I close my eyes, imagining for a fleeting moment what it must be like.
Thank you for listening to this clip provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.